a dull November morning. In Birmingham's Winston Green Jail, two guards take the elbows of a bewildered young man and march him to the gallows. He is the last to be hanged in that place. This isn't ancient history. It's 1962. The young man is Oswald Gray. He's from Jamaica, and he's been in England for just 2 years. Not heard of this before? You're not alone. It's forgotten history. A bungled robbery, a single shot from a stolen pistol, and newsagent Thomas Bates lies dead in his shop in Lee Bank Road. The law rushes to punish Oswald Gray. 6 months do not pass from the crime to the rope. Young, black, and disposable, he is a victim of miscarried justice. His story shouts to us across the decades. Who killed Oswald Gray is a story that makes sure that neither Oswald nor Thomas will be forgotten. Episode 5. Dead, buried, and mistreated, but not forgotten.
He is taken from his cell. The gallows are just a few steps away from the next room. He has never known this. It is over within moments. Hangman Harry Allen knows his craft. On that November morning in 1962, in Birmingham's Winston Green Prison, 20-year-old Jamaican Oswald Augustus Gray has been dispatched by the state. Four students have protested outside. Some prisoners have refused their breakfast. The prison has fallen silent. But now, the day will continue. The law has taken its course. Two deaths. Quiet, gentle Thomas Bates now rests in Lodge Hill Cemetery next to his father. Soon his mother, Louisa, will join them. The disposal of Oswald Gray is much less dignified. This is episode 5 of Who Killed Oswald Gray? Dead, buried, and mistreated, but not forgotten.
Hi everyone, I'm Jazzy P and I'm a broadcaster and presenter at Genesis Radio Birmingham. And today I'm here with John Berry, the author of Who Killed Oswald Gray? The execution was over in moments, but what happened to Oswald then?
You have to remember that part of the death sentence was to forbid burial in consecrated ground. It's a throwback to a distant age. Oswald joined others executed in Winston Green in the prison yard. Remember this? Plot 27, near turret number 7. In keeping with the haste with which the law dispatched him, his burial was just as undignified. Here's what prison officer Tony Mountford told playwright Peter Wynne Wilson in 1989.
It was all over very quickly. He would have dropped into a room below, and there he was attended to by two TAs, trade assistants. They had to lay him out, put him in a wheelbarrow, and take him round by the mailbag shop, or mat shop, as it used to be. And there'd be a grave dug in the grounds with a sheet round it. These TAs would be given the rest of the day off, because it would have been upsetting for them, and they'd have had trouble getting on with the rest of their work. They did plumbing, general maintenance, that sort of thing, usually.
And Tony told Peter something else, didn't he?
He certainly did.
I do vaguely remember something about the graves being disturbed sometime later to take two IRA men back to Ireland. So I'm not sure where in the grounds he'd be buried now.
Hold that thought. We'll be coming back to it soon.
And what of Thomas? What do we know of his remains?
The grave of Thomas Bates, buried near his father and mother, takes some finding among the well-tended grounds of Lodge Hill Cemetery in Selly Oak. There are grand monuments and simple headstones. Ex-service personnel are honoured with simple crosses. Some plots have fallen into deep disrepair, obscuring names and dates in a mess of broken masonry and thick vegetation. Others, as with those of Thomas and his parents, have sunk deep into the mossy earth. The written records of his death shows that a fee of £11.15 was paid for the plot. The record also shows that no headstones or masonry were purchased for any of these burial places, accounting for the unmarked anonymous land that is Thomas's resting place.
You say we'll be coming back to Oswald, but what of the rest of his family, his father Felix in particular?
Felix, Mr. Gray, is probably worth a book on his own. From what I've gleaned, he spent the years following the death of his eldest child, piecing a life together as best he could.
And eventually all Oswald's siblings, six of them, came to join him in Birmingham. Are they all still with us?
Only two. And I've spoken to one of them. I'm respecting their request for privacy. And as for them joining him in Birmingham, well, here the story takes an interesting twist. In 1973, at 60 years of age, he marries the woman he has been with here in Birmingham, Beatrice Shields. She is 63. And then?
Felix and Beatrice have scrimped enough to live with some ease back home. They decide to do what so many had imagined they would do. They will go home, having taken what they could from the cold and the wet of this mother country, and they will try to live as well as they can in the warmth and sunshine. Felix has paid little attention to the goings-on in the world as he strives to make a life. He looks about him and can see little change in the way black men like himself are treated. The prejudice and the unfairness seem woven into daily life, even if some of these Brummies, he doesn't see himself as one, have become slightly more civil. This Enoch Powell has stood at a meeting in New Street and spoken of rivers of blood. A local politician, Griffiths his name, has approved of slogans using the N-word being used by his supporters. But a black radical from America, they call him Malcolm X, has come to Smethwick to support local residents in their fight for better housing. Two black athletes have raised their fists on an Olympic podium. Felix hears that white boys are beginning to listen to the music of his homeland. There may be some changes in the air, but he remembers only the dull silence and the averted eyes at a time when this England saw fit to kill his son. He will hope and pray for his other babies, some of them parents themselves, and he will live his life in Jamaica with his bride.
So Beatrix and Felix return to Jamaica?
Yes. They set up home in Waterloo Close, Spanish Town. Familiar territory for Felix, but not Beatrice, who hails from Ginger Hill, St. Elizabeth, some 100 miles away.
And did they lead a good life?
As far as we know. Felix dies in 1988 at the age of 75. Beatrice lives on until 2008 and dies at the fine old age of 98.
And I guess back in Birmingham, their various children get on with life too.
They do. And there's even a touch of glamour. A few months after Oswald's execution, Beatrice's daughter, Phyllis, takes herself off to a gig at Digbeth Civic Hall.
Phyllis is what age? About 20?
That's right. The same sort of age as Oswald, who she was friendly with, although very keen to point out when we spoke that it was purely platonic. She had, of course, given evidence, although not to any great effect, during the trial. She'd said that she and Felix were having a drink with Oswald, Roy she called him, of course, but couldn't convincingly specify where and when. It hadn't helped, really.
So she's at this gig in Digbeth in 1963?
And there's a young, charismatic musician on the stage, and she falls head over heels.
And this is Laurel Aitken, the godfather of ska music royalty in Birmingham and beyond.
That's right, Laurel Aitken. They marry 2 years later and remain married for 8 years. Laurel dies in 2005, aged 78. Phyllis is still very much with us. She was 85 in June 2025.
Can we just go back to the prison officer, Tony Mountford, and what he said about Oswald being reburied? Is that what happened?
The short answer is yes. But I just want to take a short step back. You'll remember that I said that part of the death penalty was that the executed had to be buried in prison grounds. Well, with the abolition of the death penalty in 1965, just 3 years later, the law made another provision. Here are the words of Labour MP Charles Purnell asking a question in the House of Commons.
I wish to ask the Home Secretary where he thinks fit, under such conditions as he considers desirable, to give back the body to the next of kin where that is desired. This is one of those things which is more in tone with the state of civilization in our time. Having executed a man, we should no longer render such great harm and hurt to his relatives.
So the law was changed. The bodies of the executed could be returned to their relatives for a full and proper burial.
Yes, but there's a catch. The relatives themselves had to make the approach. They weren't automatically informed of this change in the law. And you won't be surprised to know that nobody went out of their way to let them know of these changes.
Yeah, but some people were very much on the ball, weren't they?
Yes. And this is where prison officer Tony Mountford's faint recollections come in. In 1940, two IRA men, James McCormack and Peter Barnes, were hanged in Winston Green Prison for their part in a bombing in Coventry. Now, stick with me. They were buried one on top of the other in plot 26 near turret number 7.
And Oswald was in plot 27.
Yep. Hold that thought. Now, as I've just explained, Barnes and Cormack were buried on top of each other in plot 26, but there was still space above them. So when Corbett Roberts, another Jamaican, by the way, was executed for murdering his wife in 1955, they buried him on top of the two Irishmen. Fast forward to 1968 in Dublin, and the IRA realise that the law has changed and know that they can bring Barnes and Cormack back to Ireland for a full funeral with honours. Knowing the law is on their side now, they make application for the removal of their bodies.
But they're under Corbett Roberts, who will have to be moved to get them. Do the prison authorities inform his family that he will be disturbed, or perhaps use the occasion to explain that this would be a good opportunity to have access to his remains?
They do not. There's quite a lengthy correspondence between the prison governor and the Home Office about this, but they do not. Of course, there's no absolute obligation by law to do so, but they don't. So they dig out Roberts's coffin to get to the Irishman.
One Jamaican, Corbett Montagu Roberts, is disturbed, disinterred from plot 26. Next to him lies the grave of Oswell Gray. The scale drawing of the grounds showing him less than a foot away. Shoveling the wet earth above Barnes and McCormick and from under Corbett Roberts is filthy, straining work. The prison governor specially commends those who undertake it. It is impossible for them to leave Oswell's grave, which is inches away, intact, as they go about this dispiriting task. Barnes and McCormick go back to Dublin. Thousands see them reburied with flag and drums and gunshots and front page coverage. Corbett Montagu Roberts and Oswell Augustus Gray are replaced in plots 26 and 27 in Winston Green Prison. The law says that their family can call upon the same provision as the IRA, but nobody has told them so.
And what about you, John? Have you told Oswald's family that they can have access to his remains?
I have. But as I've explained earlier, I've also got to respect that for the moment, some members of the family have expressed the wish not to be part of this whole exploration. Look, I completely get that. But I do hope that the book and this broadcast will show the honest intent of my research and of that of the people, and that they'll come fully on board.
Felix and Beatrice at last lived out their days in the Jamaican sun. And Felix found love and glamour with Laurel. But there was never any peace for Oswald. They rushed his trial in less than a week. They rushed his appeal in less than an hour. They gave his call for clemency short shrift, carrying their ill-found prejudice with them as they did so. And then they disturbed what little rest he had found, and had done so in secret. But now it is 2025. More than 60 years have passed, and times have changed since we sent people to the gallows. Does this still matter? In the sixth and final episode of Who Killed Oswald Gray, we'll see why his short life and violent death speaks to us across the ages.
You have been listening to episode 5 of Who Killed Oswald Gray? Dead, buried, mistreated, but not forgotten. You have heard the voices of Sue Brown, Jazzy P, Peter Wynne Wilson, Paul Ferguson, and the writer, John Berry. Original music is written and performed by Anthony Williams and Sue Brown. Other music is supplied by Bloodline Music. The producer is Paul Toll and Iron Chicken George, executive editor. This has been a GCRB presentation.
Who Killed Oswald Gray is a Genesis Radio production, all rights reserved. For permission to use any part of this broadcast, contact the author John Berry at www.johnberrywriter.co.uk.